North Korea is the impossible state. It's a place that stumped leaders and policymakers for more than three decades. It has a complex history, and it has become the United States' top national security priority. Each week on this show, we'll talk with the people who know the most about North Korea.
Welcome, everyone, to another episode of the Impossible State podcast at CSIS. My name is Victor Cha, Senior Vice President for Asia, Korea Chair and Professor at Georgetown University. We're very happy to welcome back to the program today Ramon Pacheco Pardo to have a conversation about South Korea's recent national election results that took place last week. Ramon, again, is no stranger to the program, no stranger to CSIS. He's a professor of international relations at King's College London and is also the KFVUB Korea Chair at the Brussels School of Governance at the VUB in Brussels. So I have a pretty short commute between Georgetown and CSIS, but you have a slightly longer commute between Brussels and London. He is also the King's College Regional Envoy for East and Southeast Asia, an adjunct fellow with us here at the Korea Chair at CSIS, council member of the Elcano Royal Institute in Madrid, and committee member at CSCAP. He is a prolific author. His most recent book is the one that we authored together, Korea, A New History, by Yale University Press. But he also has written, what is this? He's written three additional books in a period of 4 years. He's written South Korea's Grand Strategy, published by Columbia in 2023, Shrimp to Whale, South Korea from the Forgotten War to K-pop, published by Hearst and Oxford University Press in 2022, and North Korea-U.S. Relations, from Kim Jong-il to Kim Jong-un, published by Routledge in 2019. So a prolific, prolific author. And so we're very happy to have you back on the program again, Ramon.
It's a pleasure to be back here, Victor.
Thanks. So like I said, we're going to talk about these elections in South Korea that took place. And we have a little graphic to start us off to give people a sense of what changed during this period of time when South Koreans went to the polls. So this is what the makeup looked like of the National Assembly in 2023. The blue represents the main opposition party in Korea, the Democratic Party. And the red represents the ruling party, the People Power Party. And as we saw, the opposition party held 156 seats prior to last week's election. And the People Power Party held 114 seats prior to the election. Koreans went to the polls last week, and the results were a victory for the opposition party. So if we go back to the overall look here, again, they had 156 seats, the Democratic Party did, prior to the election. They increased that margin to 175 seats. And then the ruling party lost, six or seven seats as a result of this election. And then there was also a splinter party, the so-called Rebuilding Korea Party, which garnered 12 seats. According to, so this was clearly a victory for the opposition Democratic Party. I've been criticized on social media a bit because I said that I thought the international press was, we're all sort of piling on using the same terminology, landslide, crushing defeat for the ruling party, where, as we'll talk about, some of the benchmarks that really would have given the Democratic Party a great deal of power were not met. And a lot of people got angry at me for doing that, but that's okay. according to the latest polling that we've seen, The Democratic Party still, I mean, even though they won this election, they still polled only 37% in terms of party support. The ruling party, even though they lost in this election, are only slightly lower at 33.6%. And this was a survey that took place this week. So, and President Yoon's approval rating is at 32%, so which is down about 5%. and certainly not, well, I guess one could say par for the course in terms of his overall approval ratings. They've not been very good throughout his presidency. So let's talk about this, right, Ramon? And I guess the first question I want to ask you is, you know, in your opinion, was this a win for the opposition Democratic Party, or was it really a negative vote against the incumbent incumbent president and the party?
In my view, this particular election was more of the latter. There was a vote against the president himself and against his party, and we saw this in the run-up to the election, in which foreign policy was not really discussed at all. It's not commonly discussed, as we know, in Korean elections or any other country's elections. But in this case, it was clearly about domestic politics, and it was about the criticism that President Yoon is receiving around many different issues that we can discuss in a second. And I do think that if we look at the turnout, 67%, which is the highest in 32 years for a National Assembly election, I think this showed the passion that many Korean voters had and how they expressed this passion in giving a majority to the DP. And then, as you mentioned, there are other left-leaning parties as well that did quite well in this election. And that's why I lean more towards this second interpretation. There was more of both of punishing the policies pursued by the president and also his leadership style, which has been criticized by many Korean voters.
Mm. Yeah, so I want to talk about the issues that were at play in this election, but let's just talk a little bit more about the math of the election. Again, if we look at these graphics we have up here, maybe you can explain to our readers, our listeners. So as we said, the Democratic Party now has 175 seats, right? And then if we look at the math, like an important number, I guess, is it 185 or 186 or something like that? Whatever is you'll tell us why that's important. And then the ruling party didn't dip below 100 seats, right? It's at 108. So if we talk about the math here, why is this important? Like, why is it important that that we think about these numbers? Oh, and it's important to mention this splinter party, the Rebuilding Korea Party, has 12 seats, right? And so how does this all matter in terms of the way the National Assembly works?
Well, first of all, if there had been a two-thirds majority for the DP, so 200 seats of the 300, and some polls actually, including exit polls, were predicting that they could get to this threshold, they would have meant that President Yoon wouldn't have had veto power, because the National Assembly would have been able to override veto power, so it would have been able to legislate without the president being able to do that much. There could have been an impeachment process, and obviously with this two-third majority, President Yoon would have been in big trouble, because this could have actually happened. So this two-thirds threshold, which also allows, by the way, the Constitution to be reviewed, right? So certain articles in the Constitution as well. So the DP would have had a free hand, really, for the next 3 years or even 4 years duration of this National Assembly, the four-year duration, to be able to legislate without the president being able to do much, and his own position would have been in doubt. Now, if we go down to 180, right, three-fifths of the 300 seats, this would have also allowed the DP by itself to have the initiative when it comes to legislation. Yes, this could have been vetoed by the president in this case, but obviously it would have taken a political toll. If you have the National Assembly constantly passing new legislation and the president constantly vetoing it, right? So it would have been an issue as well. And this is where it becomes interesting, because as you were showing, right, we have the Rebuilding Korea Party led by Chaeguk, the former Minister of Justice under President Moon, who in his time in office, he went on trial, and this was when President Yoon himself was the prosecutor, right, our prosecutor, that was leading on the investigation. So he has this personal animosity towards Yoon, the President Yoon, and vice versa, right? You see that he has 12 seats. So if you add the 12 seats that he has with the 175 that the DP has, you get over this 180-seat threshold. But that means that this gives him a lot of power because the DP will have to sit down and talk to him. And interestingly, recently, Cegu has actually said that he's willing to talk to other parties. He's also willing to talk to the PPP, and he's willing to talk, sit down and talk to President Yoon. So we see now that this being a small party that was only formed prior to this election, but you have a leader who is very popular among liberals in Korea, right? And he can conceivably try to be the next liberal candidate for the next presidential election that we'll have in 3 years, as opposed to, for example, Lee Jae-myung, who is the leader of the DP. So the politics of it and how the numbers have turned out means that you have a smaller party that, again, didn't exist a few months ago, that now you could argue can become kingmaker in the National Assembly.
Yeah. So that's interesting. Well, so if we look at the math of this rather than the politics of it, you know, a true landslide or crushing defeat would have been if the Democratic Party had broken the 180 threshold or even the 200 threshold, where they could have effectively completely sidelined the incumbent president and basically, or even could have impeached him, mm-hmm. right? And they could even change the Constitution. The president would have no veto power whatsoever. But what actually happened was, in the end, the DP got more seats, but they didn't cross that threshold. And now you have this party. I mean, if there was a real winner in this election, it's really Chol-guk and this rebuilding Korea Party, who now the DP needs to get over that threshold in order to be able to govern in ways that would be not just obstructive to the administration, but actually be able to advance an agenda through legislation that they have not been able to do thus far. In the National Assembly, and then the other thing is, if we look at the math, is if the DP, the Democratic Party, with 175 seats, if they were able to get the support of all the other non-PPP winners in the election, so it's the Rebuilding Korea Party, it's this Reform Party, it's this Progressive Party. If they pulled all of these together, would that take them over that would take them certainly over 180, but it would take them, would that take them over the 200 mark or not?
That gets them to 192.
I see.
Right. Okay. And it has to be said that there are liberal parties here, but also conservative parties, right? Having said that, it doesn't mean that the conservative parties are going to side with the PPP, because there were splinter parties from the PPP, right? So it becomes, I think, more complicated than saying, well, left-leaning parties, right-leaning parties, and they're going to be the left-leaning parties working together in the National Assembly. Not necessarily, because within the left-leaning bloc, there are different parties, right? And some of them, they don't really get along with the DP. And they came out actually as splinter parties from the DP. And same on the conservative side, we have politicians who were not happy with the way the PPP was being run. And they decided that they would run independently, and they were able to be elected to the National Assembly. So I think that's something that we'll have to pay attention to, the divisions within the two camps, and not only the 192 for all the parties that could be argued are in the opposition, and the 108 that you see for the PPP. And as you know, even within the PPP, there are many lawmakers elected now who are not happy with President Yoon's leadership. So they will also be basically looking at whether they can be the next presidential candidate for the party, and that doesn't mean necessarily that they will support President Yoon's policy agenda. But also in the DP, there are many lawmakers who would like to remove Lee Jae-myung, right? The leader of the party, from his position, so they can actually be the next presidential candidate or run the party until the next presidential election. I think we'll have to pay attention to this as well.
Interesting. Okay, let's actually talk about some of the issues. This election, you know, was clearly about power in the legislature. But what were the issues at play that you think motivated voters either to vote for the DP or to vote for the ruling party? And also, there were a bunch of late-breaking issues that were taking place: the doctor strike, the whole question of releasing more real estate, previously restricted real estate for development, and some scandals. So maybe you could explain to our listeners what were some of these issues that were at play during the election.
So I think we had some long-standing issues, meaning since President Jun was elected, he has been accused of not running his office as a politician would do, which means talking to the opposition or even talking to lawmakers in his own party. He has been accused of following this prosecutorial approach based on his long-standing and successful career, really, as a prosecutor. So he's taking, according to his critics, this confrontational approach, not willing to sit down with the opposition, not willing to go to the National Assembly to try to garner enough votes for his signature policies when it comes to domestic policies. So it was this issue of style. There is also this issue of his wife having been accused of corruption. For example, there's this video that has made the rounds in Korean social media and also traditional media, where she's receiving a luxury handbag and she keeps it. And we know what has happened with the handbag, but obviously this is not legal under Korean legislation. She has also been accused of plagiarizing her PhD thesis, and she has been clear of this, but many people in the opposition and even in the conservative camp think that this shouldn't have been the case. So there's the style, there's the corruption issues that have been raised by the opposition, but also, as you were saying, more recent issues. If we look at the doctor strike, so for listeners who and viewers who don't know, basically the government announced that it was going to increase the number of places in medical school, which I think Korea really needs, especially in rural areas, to have more doctors. So the policy itself, in the beginning especially, was supported by a majority of voters in Korea, and actually this helped to boost the approval rate of the president. But then it turned out that this hadn't been discussed with doctor associations to begin with medical schools. This hadn't been discussed with the opposition. And even within the party, the PPP, the Conservative Party, there was that were surprised by this announcement, right? So again, this goes back to issue that I just mentioned. For many, President Yoon is not willing to sit down and discuss policy before it is actually announced, so to reach a consensus. So this turn against him, as we saw the strikes continuing for many weeks, really, we saw that non-emergency medical procedures were being canceled or were being postponed. And we saw that there was no willingness to sit down and say, okay, well, I have announced 2,000 extra places in medical schools. Is this the right number? Do we need more or do we need less? How can we implement this? Because it has been announced that it will start already this year. So this fall, potentially, we could have 2,000 more future doctors being trained. But again, this hasn't been discussed, for example, with medical schools and the teachers who actually have to teach these doctors who would have to work more. Mm-hmm. So that became a big issue. There was also a visit to a market in which President Jun commented how cheap green onions were, and it turned out that it was a subsidized market, right? So it's not only in Korea. I mean, in the UK, it's the same. You know, when politicians go to markets, to supermarkets, they don't necessarily know the prices because they don't do their own shopping in many cases,
yeah,
right?
It's a bad move.
It's a bad move. It's a bad move, right? Yeah. And of course, voters noted that and say, well, the president doesn't know the prices of staples that we all have to buy, and we have noticed the increase in the inflation in Korea as well. So this also became an issue, and real estate has been a long-standing issue. But again, this was announced by the government, new policies to try to lead to the building of more flats in the case of Korea, more housing provision. But again, it seemed that this hadn't been discussed, certainly with opposition, but even within the party. So again, this went back to the narrative that President Yoon doesn't want to sit down and talk to others, right? And sometimes that he's too stubborn. So regardless of whether you agree or disagree with this, it's clear that the majority of Korean voters think that this is actually the case, and this really hurt him in the run-up to the election, and by extension, the PPP also suffered.
Yeah. The green onion one in particular was pretty bad. I mean, I'm not a political consultant by any means, but the one thing that's pretty clear is if you're the incumbent, right? If you're the incumbent, the opposition's always going to paint you as being elitist and sort of in a bubble. Mm-hmm. And so the worst thing you can do as an incumbent in a campaign is show up at a market. because you clearly have not been doing any of your shopping yourself. I remember long ago in U.S. politics, there was a case of an incumbent that went and was astonished at how the checkout cashier was using barcodes to scan the price of goods. And he thought that that was just amazing, where for every American, that was just a part of their life. So
in the UK, it's a pint of milk. What's the price of a pint of milk?
It was a pint of milk in the UK. Yes. Yeah. So there you go. So that's the advice that Ramon and I can give to future incumbent politicians. Don't visit a market on the campaign trail. So I guess, you know, one serious question, though, is, you know, as we know, South Korea has a single five-year term presidency. He's now finishing year two. He's got three more years to go, President Yoon does. With this loss in this election, is he now effectively a lame duck?
I don't think so. A, because when it comes to foreign policy, and we can discuss a bit more about this later on, really the president can take, he can call the shots, right? And he has been doing this, let's not forget, he was facing a minority in the National Assembly for the past 2 years. So this is not new to him. And he has been calling the shots when it comes to foreign policy. Now, when it comes to domestic politics, we'll have to see, because President Yoon now has said that he's going to change his leadership style. He's going to make major changes in his cabinet. So he may decide that it is in his interest to actually sit down and talk to the opposition, talk even to his own party, to try to get some signature measures approved by the National Assembly on matters that relate to economic policymaking, to reform of the social welfare state in Korea when it comes to support for innovation. And I say this, and many don't agree with me, but many actually do, that when it comes to major issues, when it comes to economic policymaking, you don't see major difference between the liberals and the conservatives. Support for innovation, semiconductors, biotech, AI, 80-90% of South Korean legislators agree that this is in the interest of Korea. They may disagree on what type of support you want to provide, how long this support should be for, how much money you may want to give, but they're arguing really about the smaller issues. They're not arguing about the big issue, which this is necessary. If you look at the reform of the welfare state in Korea, which most Koreans agree is necessary, this has been pursued by both liberals and conservatives over the past 20 plus years. Now in Korea, one of the big debates is the low birth rate. What can we do to increase it, right? And you don't see major differences in terms of policy between liberals and conservatives. They think alike about what would be necessary to raise it. Now, I think you would need to have more dialogue between the president and the opposition, because otherwise the opposition has no incentive to support the policies of the president, which in a sense they probably would be their own policies if they were in power, right? But now obviously they're in the opposition. Now, if this doesn't change and we follow this approach of not really discussing with the opposition or even within their own party what policies to pursue, not necessarily a lame duck, but clearly it would be very difficult for any policy measure that the president wishes to pursue to be approved by the National Assembly. So I think a style is really going to matter for the next 3 years. Well, at the very least, the next year and a half, 2 years, because obviously in 1 year and a half, 2 years, we'll be talking about the next presidential election. And then it's true that in the last year of the presidency, it's more difficult for the National Assembly to give any, to allow June or his party to score any points.
Let's talk a little bit about foreign policy then. I mean, you mentioned that a Korean president has more leeway on foreign policy than domestic policy. Your thoughts on, you know, how this will affect his policies towards the alliance, towards Japan, towards Europe, where South Korea is playing a big role in the war in Ukraine. These sorts of things. I mean, it is interesting to note that there are some newcomers who won seats in this National Assembly election who are, major foreign policy hands, like Wee Sung Lok, right, who was former ambassador to Russia, formerly head of the South Korean side for the six-party talks with North Korea, was, I think, also national security advisor on the campaign for Lee Jae-myung as well. So he now has a seat. Kim Gunn, who was the senior envoy for six-party talks, foreign ministry diplomat, professional, also has garnered a seat. Park Jin, the former foreign minister, someone we know well, unfortunately lost in his bid to transition from the Yoon government's top diplomat to returning to the National Assembly, where he'd been a politician before. But what are your thoughts on sort of these issues, the alliance, Japan, and Europe?
For me, the starting point is that if you look at domestic politics, but also where Korea is in the world, there are structural constraints to what any president can do. So you have 90% of Koreans support the alliance and have a favorable view of the U.S. 80% more or less have a negative view of China. This constrains decision-making for any president, really. But also, if you look at this, when it comes to the Korea's position in international affairs, there is a growing demand on Korea to intervene, for example, in supporting Ukraine when it comes to Russia's invasion. To have a say in issues in the Middle East, for example, in the past, Korea could argue, well, there's nothing lost for our country there. Even if you look at this so-called G7 Plus, right? The reason why Korea has been discussed as a potential member of an expanded G7 is because it gets along very well with the G7 members, increasingly well with the G7 members, including Japan, it has to be said, right? Mm-hmm. So there are these structural issues that any Korean president has to pay attention to, this growing demand on Korea to deliver public goods way beyond the Korean peninsula. And I start with this because I do think that President Yoon will continue the same policy because he personally believes in this policy. Also because one of the few advantages that I see with having a non-renewable five-year term in Korea, I think we'd better to have something similar to the U.S., but we don't have it in Korea, is that a president can run his or her foreign policy without having to think about re-election. And this can lead to decisions that may be seen as unpopular, but in this case, President Yoon doesn't have to think about, well, will I be voted in or out on the next election? That's not an option for him. So I think he's going to double down on his policies. I think Korea is going to be asked, whoever wins the election here in the U.S., we have European Parliament elections, of course, in the European Union as well. There are elections taking place in countries such as the U.K. Coming up as well over the next year. Korea is going to be asked to contribute more. For example, to support Ukraine, as I mentioned before, to deter China, or to be involved in discussions about how to deal with China, or if there's the whole North Korea debate in which Korea itself has reached out to the U.S., at the U.N., but also the bilateral level, to garner a group of countries that are going to allow Korea, the U.S., other countries to continue to implement the sanctions, monitor the sanctions on North Korea now that we have seen what happened in the UN Security Council with Russia vetoing the extension right of the 1718 panel, 1718 panel, right? So I do think that it will continue the same course. And I actually have to say, I think that if President Yoon finds that it's very difficult or continues to be very difficult, maybe that's the exact term, to implement his preferred domestic politics, so that has been the case over the past 2 years, he will say, well, I'll just focus on foreign affairs, because Korea is in demand. We see the number of state visits by the president to other countries in Europe, in the Middle East, obviously here in the U.S. as well. You see foreign leaders visiting Korea. I mean, I come from Europe. We have seen the Dutch prime minister, Spanish prime minister visiting Korea. There's a presidential visit upcoming to Germany. There's a past one to the Netherlands. There was a past one to the UK as well. So Korea is in demand because of its business people, because of a strong defense industry, because of participation in this G7 Plus framework that I mentioned previously. Mm-hmm. I don't see this changing.
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting that as you said that. On domestic policy, there'll be a lot of wrangling that takes place on domestic policy. But they're in many ways they're arguing over the same issues, right? How to improve growth, how to create innovation, how to help small and medium sized enterprises, how to increase full employment, and not just part time jobs. There are many similar things. But on foreign policy, where I think you're right, Yun will basically continue on the path that he's on, because it's a path that he created when he was already in the minority and was already unpopular. So he's just going to continue because he believes in it, as you said. But there could be very big differences on foreign policy. So if, for example, the DP garners, gets to 180, where they can then fast track bills and things, or even if they got to 200 or over 200, they could try to push a completely different foreign policy, right? During the campaign, Lee Jae-myung and some other people, did not approve of the policy on Japan, actually called for neutrality on Ukraine, right? And obviously they have big differences on policy towards North Korea. So there could be very big differences that would have been impacted in terms of foreign policy by the results of this election.
So that's an interesting point. I mean, I've been criticized for making the point that I'm about to make. I think someone like Lee Sun-lak, for example, that, as you mentioned, he is now in the National Assembly. And it's true, he was the lead foreign policy, national security policy advisor to Lee Jae-myung when he was candidate, right? He's center-left. He's center-center, some would say, actually, right? Uh-huh. And I'm sure you've talked to him. You met him many times. Of course, I know you have. I've been able to meet with him and discuss foreign policy with him. And he's someone that you wouldn't be surprised if he served in a conservative administration, sure. Right? And for me, that's an interesting thing. Same with Kim Gunn. I mean, Kim Gunn, yes, center-right, but if he served in a center-left administration, he wouldn't necessarily be out of place there. Yes, it's true. There are other National Assembly members that have been elected that have more leftist views, right? Yeah. The more traditional leftist view of we are brothers with North Korea and the U.S. is to blame, clearly, right? So there's a debate there. So I always take with a pinch of salt or a grain of salt, really, what is said in a campaign, right? When you're trying to undermine the policy of the opposition.
Yeah.
I would like to see if a liberal president comes to office, whether they would be able to follow this policy. And I honestly have doubts, among other reasons, because of the constraints that I mentioned.
From the public.
Yeah. I mean, if you want to run a policy that undermines the alliance and becomes closer to China, well, you have 80-90% of the population, I would say, well, we don't necessarily like this. And I think that in a democracy, that should matter. And personally, I think to an extent it matters. But there are many, probably a majority, that would agree with you instead of me. And they would say, well, there could be a big change if the liberals had this super majority, for example, that they didn't achieve. And something very interesting we did at my chair back in Brussels in the run-up to the campaign, for the first time ever, we actually asked the candidates about the policy towards Europe. Right? Mm. The two campaigns, right? President Yoon, before he became president, Lee Jae-myung as well. And we asked him about EU, NATO, Europe, right? And their answers were fairly similar, as we said. We have this online, actually. If anyone's interested, they can go to our website. It was like, whoa, what's the difference here between both of them? And the answers came from the foreign policy teams. Obviously, back then, the candidates wouldn't sit down and answer our questions, but the foreign policy teams.
Sure.
And that's what I find interesting, that I doubt that a Korean president can have a free reign in foreign policy. It could be, I guess, in the past. North Korea is a different matter, of course, right? North Korea, it would be different, but then it has to be said, I mean, dealing with the current North Korea, how much leeway do you have to pursue a policy of engagement like the one we saw, not even under Moon, but the one we saw, for example, in 2000 and, during the first two liberal administrations, right, in which you clearly saw a pro-engagement policy, might be more difficult today than it was in the past, really, because of North Korea's stance.
Yeah, right. Because, they may want to pursue it, but because of North Korea's stance these days, when they're not willing to talk to anyone, it seems, except China and Russia, it might be very difficult. Okay, can we, as a final thing, just talk about some of the notable winners and losers in the race, and sort of just get your thoughts. So, some of the big political heavyweights that won, obviously Lee Jae-myung, right, former candidate, An Chol-soo won, Chu Mi-ae, right, Lee Jun-suk, right. Mm-hmm. So we have political heavyweights from both the left and the right. With big wins. And then also the return of Na Kyung-won, right? Mm-hmm. Na Kyung-won is back now. after having won her race. So really on both sides, political heavyweights are back or reelected or are returning, which I think, you know, on the DP side, it's very clear who wants to run next time. But it really is an open field, right, on the conservative side, because one of the results of this election is that the leader of the party, the so-called, I mean, he was sort of the fair-haired child, you know, the anointed one who was likely to succeed, has had to resign because of the loss. So it's kind of an open field now, and you have all these other people who are there. Former Prime Minister Lee Nak-yeon lost, right? Park Jin, as we said, lost. And then Tae Young-ho also, the famous sort of North Korean escapee turned South Korean politician, also lost. So any thoughts on first on that group? Any thoughts on those? Or
I mean, I think the election really reinforces Lee Jae-myung's position, as we said, because let's not forget, many within his party don't want him to be the next presidential candidate, and they even blame him for the very narrow victory that President Yoon had in the last election. They said, we have had a more center-left candidate or less controversial candidate, right, from his time as governor of Gyeonggi-do, right? That they would have won because the difference was so small. But now he can say, I delivered. And yes, he's in legal trouble. We see where it is in 2-3 years' time, his legal troubles, right? But he has a strong hand saying, well, I delivered. I only lost the election, the past election, by a very small margin, so I do deserve to run for president. I would like to see someone like Chegu, for example, says, I'm going to try the leadership of the DP, right? He doesn't have to, he has his own party, but as we know in Korea, yes, the parties change their names, but we have the two big parties, liberal, conservative, and they are the ones that will run in candidates that have a strong possibility of being the next president. So let's see where he is. Again, despite his legal troubles, but even if he has a 2 years prison sentence that he has to serve, this still would mean that he would be in time to run for the leadership of the party next time around. I think on the conservative side, it is an open field, it has to be said. Because as you said, we thought we have a clear candidate, the leader of the PPP, and he's gone. And now we have big personalities who are going to be, maybe not the next year, but clearly in a year and a half or so, we are going to start to see who are the ones that have a strong possibility of becoming the next president. I think we'll see many of them interested running against Yoon, not only against the opposition. And this is not new. In Korea, when Park Geun-hye, for example, became president after Lee Moon-bak, two conservative presidents from the same party. But Park, during her campaign, she was running really against Lee Moon-bak as much as she was running against the liberals. And I wouldn't be surprised if we see the same on the conservative side. Say, look, yes, I'm from the same party as President Yoon, but I'm from another wing of the party. So I want to see how different heavyweights position themselves. But as I said, I think it's a bit early at this point in time. We'll see who becomes the next leader of the PPP. We'll see whether it's a challenge for the leadership of the DP. I still think there will be a challenge to the leadership of the DP, especially if these legal troubles that Lee Jae-myung is facing become more serious. And he's prosecuted and has to go on trial. And I would be surprised if we know over the next year who are going to be the candidates. I think we'll get to it 1 year and a half, 2 years, and then we'll have a clear picture. What I do think we'll see is that there will be many candidates on the conservative side.
Yeah.
5, 6, 7 candidates that potentially could be the next leader of the party and therefore run the next candidate that runs for election, the next presidential election. As I said, I want to see on the liberal side what is actually people who are outside of the DP, who, whether they'll remain outside, starting with Chegu, or they go into the DP because they don't have a bigger chance of becoming president if they're actually part of one of the mainstream parties.
Yeah, yeah. And so just to finish, one, I think it's, I mean, unfortunately, it's worth noting that what we see going forward is that, look, as I said, the right now the support for after this election, right after this election, support for the DP is at 37%, support for the PPP basically at 34%. If you factor in a margin of error there, then you're not really talking about much of a difference. And so that means political polarization will probably deepen going forward, right? I mean, the conservatives will want to try to take down both Lee Jae-myung and Cho-guk on corruption charges. The opposition will go after the president's wife. Not a pretty picture, I think, going forward. But then the other thing that's, I guess, on the positive side to say is that, you know, these are fiercely fought elections, right? Fiercely fought competitions. The last presidential election was a razor-thin victory. But is it true that for the most part, South Korean politicians, consultants, voters themselves, they don't question the system, right? They don't question the process. You know, there's always concerns about misinformation, disinformation from outside actors and others. But overall, were there questions about the process, about the electoral system or anything like that?
That's an excellent question to raise, because the answer is no. I mean, you see an acceptance of the system, right? And across the board, really, candidates in the losing side, in this case, the Conservative Party as a whole, the PPP, they do accept the verdict from the voters. Yeah. And I think that matters, because that's not necessarily the case.
No one to talk about the U.S. I don't know where you're talking about. Yeah.
No one to say anything in your home ground, right? but even in Europe now, you see such as some question in some countries in Central Eastern Europe. You know, are these clean elections or not, right? And it is concerning. And you see this in Korea, which is good to see that the losing party accepts this. Even as you said, in the last presidential election, we're talking a racial thin margin, less than 1%.
Yeah.
But you didn't see, for example, in this case, the DP asking for a recount of the votes or saying, oh, this is due to Russian interference or North Korean interference or Chinese interference in the electoral process that led to the victory of the PPP and President Yoon. And I think that matters that Koreans continue to accept this. And I don't think polarization is going away. I think, as you were saying, it's one third of the voters on the conservative side, one third on the liberal side, and one third, we don't know, right? Or they have a preference for smaller parties, or they're more towards the center, they don't particularly support one or the other party. So it's not only about the two big movements, right, or parties in Korea. It's also about the one third that don't feel represented by any of these two, but they don't question the system, right? They don't say, well, why do the big two have to have this the largest share of the vote, right? If one third is voting for other parties or abstaining, that's how the system works, and they do accept it. And I think that matters, among other things, because we have talked a lot in the past about Korea as an economic model for many developing countries, but now increasingly it is seen as a political model for countries that are suffering from democratic backsliding, or even countries in which the people would like to transition to a full democracy, which Korea is, right? And the electoral process, the integrity of the electoral process is key to this, and Korea, you could argue, is a model when it comes to this integrity.
Yeah, and apropos of that, they just hosted the Democracy Summit last month in Seoul. So anyway, Ramon, thank you so much for being on the show again, and really a great discussion about South Korea's National Assembly election results. So again, that was Ramon Pacheco-Pardo, professor at King's College and the European Union Korea Chair, joining us here at CSIS. Thank you all for watching and listening to the program, and we look forward to seeing you on the next episode of The Impossible State.
If you have a question for one of our experts about The Impossible State, email us at impossiblestate@csis.org. If you want to dive deeper into the issues surrounding North Korea, check out Beyond Parallel. That's our micro website that's dedicated to bringing a better understanding of the Korean Peninsula. You can find it at beyondparallel.csis.org. And don't forget to leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. That's so more listeners can find us. It's very helpful. We're now also streaming on Spotify, so you can find us there too, where you find all your music. How cool is that? And don't forget to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. This is The Impossible State.